Welcome to the Market Moment. My name is Matt Walters, and I'm joined with Eli Freeman
mm-hmm.
and Lee Mackey.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes and amen.
Eli is a mute this morning.
Yeah.
Good morning. Right.
Yeah. Good morning. You guys good?
Great.
All right. Good.
So today, what were you going to say?
Nothing. I mean, I think we're both a little sleep deprived.
But yeah. We're getting a little right. slow start this morning.
That's right.
All right. This week we're covering moves in the market, such as Apple being fined by the EC, the European Commission, signs of hope that rent across the country will come down, and flying cars. Before we jump in, just a quick reminder, if you like these videos, if you like the podcast, if you like the other videos we're doing, give us a like, subscribe, share it on your social media platforms. We'd really appreciate it. So we have fun with it. So help us out.
I found out last night that my mom watches our podcast.
Gee, thanks, Mom.
I know. And I was like, have you liked? And she was like, no. So I had to give her some instructions on how to like and subscribe. We will have a new subscriber, hopefully, overnight.
All right. So what's happening in the markets? The S&P 500 hugged the flat line after ending Friday with its 16th weekly win in 18 weeks. The Dow Jones fell 0.2%, while the tech-heavy NASDAQ also slid slightly. Stocks have racked up gains amid a relentless AI run-up, which helped the NASDAQ composite finally nail a fresh all-time high after a years-long wait. That tech rally and NVIDIA's breakneck rise to $2 trillion valuation in particular was prompted concerns about a building bubble, though some analysts are less worried. Bitcoin, likewise, is in the headlines approaching a record high. And then lastly, a dose of reality could lie ahead for the high hopes and the hype when the Fed's Powell, steps up to speak and the February jobs data arrives. Both will play into calculation for the interest rate cuts, blah, blah, blah. So what's going on in the market? So, guys, long and short, markets have stayed strong, continue to rise. You know, we've seen, nothing huge in the last couple weeks that I can remember.
Have we reached the point where the people who are dead set that the market is going down, that they're starting to change their story to that they've missed it?
No, the people that are... The perma bears are always perma bears, and I think they look at this as only strengthening their case. So they're not
finding the data sets that are saying that it's overvalued, or
or the times the market's done this. You know, here's the times it's sold off. You know, following or yeah. I mean, if you're a perma bear, you're a perma bear.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a 10 or 20% run is not going to change that.
Yeah.
So
I mean, It's going pretty hot. I mean, what was it, 14 in the last 16, 16 in the last 18 weeks? I mean, it's...
I mean, I would not, and you always want to hesitate. I always hesitate saying this, but I would not be, like, mad about a 5 or 10% pullback at this point. Because
no.
things, you know, we hit all-time highs. Like, mm-hmm. It would be normal at some point over the next 3 to 6 months to have a... shorter than 6 months, over the next few months to have like a normal mid-year pullback, 10%.
There was an article that just came out about healthy corrections and what they look like and the averages. And it would be in line, not saying that it's coming, but it would be in line to see something like a 10% pullback. And it might come off of some of the names that you would expect, names that are just
right.
up 100-150%.
Yeah.
I'm thinking super micro
yeah.
computer.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could see it in the indices and the big names without having to see it market wide,
sure.
right? Because of the divergence that we've had over the last year or two in some of the large cap tech companies.
You know, you mentioned it, I think, in your opening, almost called it monologue, but in your opening comments, you know, Bitcoin has kind of snuck up on us again.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's about to hit 70,000. You know, gold, precious metals are all up. And I think that's in response to the fact that the market is almost convinced that rates are going down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that, I think the Fed's done. You know, I think they are going to stick where they're at for a while. But I think that, I mean, if you look at treasuries, if you look at precious metals,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they're giving you a pretty good indication that the next move more than likely will be down in rates.
I've heard two theories about Bitcoin and every price change in Bitcoin has theories attached to it.
Yeah.
These are two that I thought were kind of interesting. One is that when economic conditions are better for the ultra wealthy, Bitcoin rises. So if assets are generally rising amongst the ultra wealthy, they'll diversify some of their portfolio into Bitcoin. But that's a good one. The other one is Bitcoin basically hit an all-time high when the movie Dune came out. If you guys have seen Dune, no, and Dune 2 just
it did just came out.
Just came out.
And coincidence? So I think not.
That's funny.
I might lean a little bit more towards your first example. And maybe less on you.
I'm just waiting for Dune 3.
I think some of the Bitcoin stuff, and we'll probably get like our most comments ever on this, you know, this Bitcoin conversation. But I think a lot of Bitcoin, you know, it's an asset class or whatever you want to call it, that it's just price. Like, is someone willing to pay more for it than you are? And it's momentum and kind of, you know, how are people feeling about it in the time? It's not, there's no true intrinsic value or cash flows from it. So I think some of it is like Bitcoin, you know, the market's done really well and like people are feeling really good and like Bitcoin is doing well because of that.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's just that positive energy around asset prices and stocks and things going up. And so people are kind of getting back in and are bullish on Bitcoin.
The problem with that is then you start getting correlation, which is part of the entire reason why people like Bitcoin is,
but not, there's no
less correlation to traditional asset classes.
Yeah, but that hasn't proved that to be true in the past necessarily.
I mean, correct.
It sold off when the market sold off, right? And when people said, "Hey, it's going to be an inflation hedge," and inflation took off, Bitcoin, you know,
plummeted,
sold off. Yeah. And so, I know the arguments, but it just hasn't necessarily proved to be true in real time.
But you don't hear near. I mean, the reason I say it kind of snuck up on us is, just no one is talking about it anymore.
It was years ago when it was rising. It was in headlines
every day.
And this time it's been a quiet rise.
It has been quieter.
You know, the markets as a whole, like we talked about. You know, we're getting a sell off today. You know, we'll see if it amounts to anything but a head fake. But you know, we talked about the AI stocks. You know, NVIDIA came out yesterday. I mean, their rise is just meteoric, just about. And this isn't a fly-by-night company. I mean, this is a company that, you know, is big. It's
worth more than countries.
Yeah. But they announced yesterday that as great as things are right now, they can't keep up with demand, that all their increase in production, they're still behind on orders. And so that just fuels this. Mm-hmm. You know, they're priced at, I don't know, $800 a share and, you know, there's many people that feel like it's still undervalued from a price standpoint. So we'll see. It and others have lifted the entire markets. You know, then you get a blue chip like Eli Lilly that's, you know, going gangbusters as well because of the Ozempic drug. And so it's interesting.
So so while y'all were talking, I was pulling up. So this is a chart, and we can show this in the podcast, put it in the podcast note, but this is SPY overlaid the top of just Bitcoin price, right?
Yeah. Since Bitcoin inception?
Well, this is 10 years, but it goes back. Yeah, it goes back to 14. Yeah, so June of 14. Not directly correlated, but pretty dang correlated. I mean, the highs and lows are definitely in line. And so I think that's kind of my view of just like when things are too good or really good, things like Bitcoin. I mean, it goes back to, you know, when we were in 2020, 2021, right?
Sure.
You had NFTs. You had, people were just literally lighting money on fire.
I mean, there was a lot of digital currencies that
and you don't hear about popping up. You don't hear about stuff. You don't hear about any of that anywhere.
No.
I don't. And I couldn't get away from it.
Yeah.
And I never bought any of it.
I mean,
just a couple years ago.
Remember the podcast we were doing 2 years ago? I mean, it was kind of like, okay, we need to stop talking about Bitcoin.
Yeah. I remember we were talking about NFTs, and then Nike purchased a company in the meta world, and they purchased a shoe company in the meta world. And I'd be very interested now to see how that shoe company has performed for Nike.
Yeah. Hey, one thing I wanted to touch on before we get off of this topic, you mentioned it in your comments, you know, about this perceived bubble. You hear the talk of bubble, you know, throughout market, especially when things are going well. Do y'all feel like we're in a bubble? I'll give you my quick thoughts. I mean, define bubble as one. I think everyone looks a little different. I mean, there was definitely a tech bubble back, you know, many years ago. But what do you guys think? Are we in a little bit of a bubble now?
I could say we're in a little bit of a bubble, probably. But from everything that I've read and have worked to understand, all of the growth or most of the growth has come from good companies
that are actually making money.
Yeah, companies are making money. It's not companies are rising because we expect something crazy to happen.
And I think that's the difference that I'm hearing more about now, mm-hmm. as compared to previous, you know, market rises, is that, you know, we're not banking on speculative companies that have zero earnings, mm-hmm. and so forth. And so anyway, you threw the word out. You're hearing a little bit more, you know, some of the,
where I think there could be a bubble that's going to continue to go down, and it has gone down, is like EV car prices. Like the little niche sectors that you can get anecdotal with, mm-hmm. where you can find bubbles. EV car prices have dropped pretty drastically and probably are going to continue to drop.
Well, and you know, and some of these car companies are not ditching EV plans, but I mean, mm-hmm. they're changing. Mm-hmm. You know, Ford is kind of the latest one that made some announcements recently, but I mean, it's, you know, we thought that there would be this craze and this mass shift to it. I think it's coming. Mm-hmm. I just don't know to what extent.
I think you'll see it. I think we're in somewhat, again, it's like you said, how do you define bubble and all that? But all that aside, I think in the technology sector in particular, you know, valuations, prices are definitely stretched. I'm not saying it's none of it's justified and there's not more validity to it than previous bubbles. Right. But yeah, it seems a bit, that part of the market seems, you know, a bit stretched. And, you know, I heard Liz Ann Saunders speak last week in Nashville, and she was really good. And she was talking about how, you know, we've had these, you know, they use the term, you've heard it, like the rolling recessions. And mm-hmm. she's like, we've had recessions kind of all over the place. They've just been like very specific to the industry or the, you know, that area in the market, and it hasn't been widespread.
Right.
And so I think you could have a bubble burst in the technology sector that maybe is less impactful market-wide than in previous bubbles, right? Mm-hmm. It's not something that takes, you know.
It's not going to bring the NASDAQ down 80%.
You may not see the NASDAQ drop 80%, but, you know, you might see things like, you know, the equally weighted S&P 500 hold up relatively well while the NASDAQ 100 and some of the big tech companies in the S&P 500 mm-hmm. sell off. I have no idea, you know, but technology definitely seems like it's been on a run for a while. So, okay.
But not Apple, as we have a segue into our next talking point.
So Apple's off its all-time high. It's not too far from it, but it sold off a little bit. Apple dropped 3% after the news broke. They had been hit with a $2 billion fine from the EC, the European Commission, for breaking competition laws. Apple intends to fight the accusation. Surprise, surprise. The EC's action was very specific. It fined the company for wielding its dominance to the detriment of its rivals in the market for the distribution of music streaming apps. So Apple illegally steered app purchases predominantly through the App Store, where Apple collects a 30% fee. Apple criticized the EC, saying that its decision failed to uncover any credible evidence of consumer harm and ignored that music streaming market is thriving, competitive, and fast-growing. So for those of you that aren't familiar, and I'm not an expert on this in any means, but by any means, but, you know, Apple, my understanding is any, you know, iOS platform that Apple is like kind of, it's that or the Android store. Anything on the App Store through iOS there's a 30% like charge for mm-hmm. any revenue that comes through that. And it's just kind of the price you pay to play with the big dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just what it is. So what are your thoughts on this? So the EC finding Apple and...
Not surprising. I mean, EC is so... I mean, they're gonna err on the side of, you know...
The little guy.
The little guy, open trade, much more so it appears than, you know, the U.S. is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that was their bad news yesterday, if you want to call it that. And then overnight, and what's affecting the stock even more this morning is iPhone sales in China dropped 24% in the last reporting period. I mean, you may think, well, what's the big deal? I mean, that's China has a lot of people, you know, and, you know, Apple needs China. Mm-hmm. And so you take, you know, their struggles over in China. You take their issues with the EC. I mean, Apple just, they're, it seems like they're just constantly facing some form of headwind, but they seem to, mm-hmm. you know, time and time again,
that's
come
the,
around it.
That's the pain for growing internationally. You sure. get into different laws, regulations that are much more restrictive than what we have in the United States. Now, there are restrictions, antitrust laws, like JetBlue and Spirit Airlines were going to merge, and now they haven't merged because of antitrust laws.
Right.
So there are rules and regulations here in the United States, but a lot of times things like this that are just good business decisions, building a service, integrating that service into a profit center, that's allowed here in the United States, whereas it looks like a monopoly outside of...
You know, and I think internationally, speaking to Apple specifically, there's a lot of competition in the phone market. It seems like much more so than over here. And so it's just, they're having a harder time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Apple's about 11.5% off their all-time high. And they hit an all-time high December 14th of last year, and they're down about 11.5% since that. Nothing. I mean, again, we were just talking about how 10% pullback is very normal for the broader market. Same thing with the company, right? So nothing to be like too concerned with yet. But
you know, but Apple is kind of the one stock that is kind of seen as so go the markets. Look at Apple. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, more so than some of these other ones. But you know, they've kind of languished behind, and the markets have.
I mean, I would imagine Apple's one of Apple's biggest risks is this exact thing.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they're sitting on more cash than most countries in the world.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're such a strong brand and company that I think their bigger risks now lie with regulations and how do they continue to grow and how do they mm-hmm. reinvest that cash, not their underlying business model and what they've built. I mean, I think they've proven that time and time again.
Wasn't it last year? What, not last year, last week that they announced that they were scrapping plans for the a car?
Yes.
It was. And I think that was actually viewed as somewhat positive.
Yeah, sure.
But they announced, I think it was late last week, that
talk about a business plan to go light money on fire for the next decade. I mean,
yeah,
trying to get that up.
What do you do when you have more cash than most countries? let's start a car company.
Yeah.
So interesting.
All right. Sorry, I wasn't ready for the next one. Okay. Are we starting to see relief for renters? The housing market has been a hot topic. We've talked about it a lot. It seems to be a topic for viewers that are interested in. Hold on, let me go back. I butchered that. So it's a topic that our viewers are very interested in. Thanks to the apartment building boom, rent prices seem to be lowering as the supply has risen and the demand is lessening. The country's median price for rent was at an all-time high of $2,000 in 2023, putting immense financial pressure on lower to middle-class Americans, a big factor which could help with both the price of rent and home ownership is lowering interest rates. Fairweather from Fox Business says just over one quarter of Gen Zers owned a home in 2023, so renting is the reality for most of that generation. However, there's still a lot of hope for Gen Z. They're still outpacing young people of the past when it comes to home ownership. Many Gen Z homeowners bought during the pandemic when mortgage rates hit historic lows, which made that entrance into home ownership more feasible at a young age. So we've had, you know, a lot of comments on this, on previous conversations about housing. This is a very sensitive topic.
Sure it is.
In a lot of ways, it impacts everybody.
Especially people who are on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of, that is, yes.
You know, it's
for sure.
Home ownership is still kind of perceived to be part of the American way. Mm-hmm. You know, I had, you know, two or three younger families in my office in the last two or three weeks, you know, and one of the comments they made was, you know, we're trying to get ready to try to buy a house. And my first question was, why? You know, and really their answer kind of boiled back to, isn't that what we're supposed to do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's difficult. I mean, not just in Northwest Arkansas, but in other parts of the country. I mean, rents are high. Rates are still high. I mean, Eli, you've been a little bit more connected to this, maybe even more so than I have. What are your thoughts on that?
It's encouraging to see rents go down. And and it makes it even more of a case to continue to encourage people, if they don't have to buy or they don't feel like they need to buy, to continue to rent. I think it makes every bit of sense, especially if you're looking at getting into a starter home that you plan to upgrade from at some point in the future.
Yeah.
It makes every bit of mathematical sense, big in bold words, mathematical sense, to rent. But it's difficult to get past the, well, this is how my siblings did it, or this is how my friends have done it,
or it's like I'm throwing money away.
Yeah.
And you, what I hear in both cases is, well, our parents have encouraged us. We have told us we need to buy.
Well, it's so hard. It's so hard. I mean, it's just such an interesting time period because we're coming off of a multi-decade run of rates going lower and lower and lower and lower and lower, and home prices increasing, but like at a pretty steady, slower clip, right? Mm-hmm. Very normal, just modest increase kind of year over year. And while rates are decreasing, so you look backwards and there's several decades of like people that it kind of was getting easier and easier to get into homes. And,
sure.
You know, and all of that just in a very short period of time flipped on its head. Rates went up, home prices went up. I think, you know, we can get into all of the reasons why, but that's no one's fault. Like, I know it's easy to be emotional and frustrated about that, but like, I think the best thing you can do is that is just like understanding the ebbs and flow of market cycles and business cycles, and knowing that this is just a snapshot in time. And yes, unfortunately, it is extremely difficult right now. It doesn't mean it will always be, but we're comparing it to like historically good times to get into a home, and it's just unfair comparison. And it's easy for me to say that because I'm not trying to buy a home right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's just tough.
What I've communicated to to them and to others is, you know, there will be a better entry point. You know, either rates are going to come down, or you're going to see at some point prices.
The question is, how long are you willing to wait for that?
That's it.
I had a guy, I had a mentor when I was living in Nashville, CFO of a publicly traded company, and just guy I respected a ton, right? And obviously knew what he was talking about. And he always said, you know, he said, if it's going to be where you raise your family, try to steer away from like the dollars and cents of like timing thing, you know, because I was kind of in the same boat. Nashville back then was booming.
Yeah.
And so I was asking him questions like, should we keep renting? We were renting a townhome at the time. It's like, should we buy a townhouse or should we keep renting? And his advice was, you know, if it's going to be a place where you're going to settle and raise your family, don't worry as – don't look at it like an investment. Look at it like the place you're going to raise your family. And if it costs you more because you do this, like, just don't get too caught up in that. Now, that's one person's opinion, right? I'm not saying that's the right way to view it. But I do think there's some truth to not looking at your primary residence if you think of this like, this is where we're going to have our kids and raise our family. It's an investment, but just because it's an asset, not because you're buying it as an investment and trying to flip it and make a profit.
I would go, and Lee, you and I have talked about this, and I actually argued on this. I would go on the side of, I really don't think your home is an investment. It is an asset, and it on your balance sheet, your personal balance sheet, it'll have a number there, but it doesn't provide you any benefit in the terms of what an investment would provide you value.
Yeah.
And so if you're making it, and eating my words a little bit, it makes more mathematical sense to rent. But if you're viewing it like what you described, as this isn't an investment, this is a family decision for what is best for my family. Now, keep it within means. Don't stretch yourself to 50% of your gross income to pay for it. But if it's within means and you're able to do it, okay.
Well, it's really not an invest unless your plan is to build and grow and like and then at some point rent. Divest that and then like go way backwards in terms of we're going to go buy, you know, a third of the house that we've been in or rent or something, then it's not an investment because you're likely going to go from that house to a very similar priced home. And so it's just going to be kind of, you know, equal trade. If not, you're trying to trade up. And so.
And people always say downsize. Well, I'll downsize one day. And some
do, but it's not super common.
But most of the time, whenever people get to the age of downsizing, then they have grandkids that they want to host.
Yeah.
And they don't want to downsize because then they can't host their grandkids.
Most people's downsizing comes so much later in life when it's to the point of like, okay, now we're physically not able to take care of right. then we're going
from a house to a a room in a nursing home. I mean,
no, I know, but at that point it's like, well, then the investment return on it's
yeah.
A lot of times, yes. A mute point, yes. Right? It's, yes. You're not doing it because of mm-hmm. that, and so.
But back to the point. I mean, rents are going down ever so slightly,
which is good, positive news, right?
Even yeah.
If it's modest, it's like you'd rather see that direction versus continued pressure.
And that's across the country. I mean, yeah. There are still pockets where we're still very, you know, very expensive, mm-hmm. and you know, around here they're building them
can't
on
build
every
them fast enough.
They cannot
homes.
They cannot.
Apartments, townhomes.
It doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Any other final thoughts on that?
No, that's good.
All right. Okay, lastly, flying cars. Would you buy one? So I'm going to just stop there before I say anything else. Would you buy a flying car?
I wouldn't be the first one, but I mean, I'm 20 to 30 years older than you guys. I don't know if we'll see them in my lifetime. But I mean, probably. I mean, I probably would. But again, I wouldn't be. I'd want to make sure that, you
would
know.
You?
Yeah.
You would.
Would you?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I need my truck, and if I want to be in the air, I'm going to just get an airplane.
Would you buy a helicopter?
Yeah, but that's different.
How?
I don't know. Let me talk. Let me read this. Okay. So. This company, I don't even know how to pronounce it, Aleph
yeah.
Aeronautics, which is based in San Mateo, California, said pre-order numbers recently hit a fresh record after previously reporting 2,500 pre-orders for its two-seater flying car, the Aleph Model A. Aleph is planning to charge customers $300,000 for the Model A when it becomes commercially available on 2,850 pre-orders. That would give it a combined order value of more than $850 million to date. Aleph is a very different style of vehicle compared to most so-called flying cars, as its Model A resembles an actual car with a mesh shell protecting 8 rotors on the inside. Can you imagine driving a car that's got like propellers just all around you? You're just,
okay, so I'm not going
to
mention.
I'd be afraid to like reach any direction, just get your arm cut off.
I was out at the Bentonville Airport, you know, within the last year, 18 months. And I'm not going to mention whose hangar I saw one in, but there was a prototype of essentially a flying car out there as one of those air shows they brought out there.
Stop talking about your hangar, Lee.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So this is
interesting.
This is me and Elon Musk, I think, see this very similarly. So this is funny. So he said he doesn't think they're a good fix for road traffic. He said, direct quote, if somebody doesn't maintain their flying car, it could drop a hubcap and guillotine you. Yes. See, Musk gets it. The dangers are just far outweigh the benefits.
Matt's like, me and my boy Elon, we think the same.
He says, your anxiety level will not decrease as a result of things. I'm going to get started. So anyways, long and short, I will not be buying a flying car.
But wouldn't you rather be up there than on the road?
I would much prefer being a helicopter.
Yeah, I'll break your windshield with my hubcap, but I'll be flying.
Maybe in 30 years, but helicopters have kind of been, the concept's been proven over many decades. And so I would still choose helicopter, and then maybe in 40 years after.
I mean, and that's my point. I think that they're going to, do I think they're a part of the future? Yes. Dude, I think that they're part of probably my future.
How do you
probably
monitor the traffic, though? That's my thing. It's like, it's one thing with helicopters and planes now because it's so limited. And so there are basic rules about flying at certain elevations and around. But
have you not watched the Jetsons?
But, little details, man.
But if everyone at 8:15, all of a sudden you just look around and everyone at their house is just elevates straight up into the air.
Survival of the fittest.
And you've got 20,000 vehicles trying to get to work. Yeah. That's complete chaos. That'll be like, I just want nothing to do with it. And then my commute to work, I'll get there in no time in my F-150.
I mean, calm down over there.
I don't know. You know, 30 years ago, we probably thought electric cars were something that never would occur mm-hmm. to.
Yeah. I'm sure there will be, that we'll have them.
Yes.
But I'm not super excited about them. Anyways, I didn't realize I'd be so worked up.
Tell us how you really
invested
feel.
Invested in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not going to say the dad joke. I'm sorry. It's bad. Zoe put a dad joke on here, and I just refuse. But we need comments, so...
If you need to comment if you agree with Lee's statement that you think there will be a better entry point for housing in the future.
Ready, set, go.
Because I don't know if I personally agree with that. So comment on that.
I kind of thought, I kind of looked at your countenance when I said that. I do. I think right. that, you know, I don't necessarily think that prices will go down and interest rates will go down, but I think that there will be a better entry point than today.
Can I give your personal cell phone number out so they can call you, people can call you and
yes,
let you know if they agree?
No.
All right. Well, as always, we appreciate you listening and watching the podcast, and we'll see you guys next week.
Have a good week.
The hosts of this show are employees of Mach 1 Financial Group. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing said in the show should be taken as investment advice. Mach 1 Financial Group, LLC, is an SEC registered investment advisor located in Rogers, Arkansas. Mach 1 may only transact business in those states in which it maintains a notice filing or qualifies for an exemption or exclusion from registration requirements. SEC registration does not constitute an endorsement of the firm by the commission, nor does it indicate that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. The information presented is the sole opinion of the speaker and is not meant to be investment advice. Mach 1 does not provide tax or legal advice. You should speak to your tax or legal advisor regarding your specific situation. For full disclosures, click on the link in the episode description below.